welcome to St. Florian's, the podcast that tells the stories of those who serve the common good. I'm your host, Father Matthew Young. St. Florian is the patron saint of firefighters, chimney sweeps, and soap makers. And after four episodes, I still don't know any chimney sweeps or soap makers. So we're going to continue our discussions with firefighters and other public servants and hear their stories. Talk a little faith and have some real, open, and honest conversations, you know, about this thing we call life. So today we sit down with Brandon Gray, a career firefighter EMT with the Independence, Kentucky Fire Protection District. He and his wife Heidi and their children Ezra, who is 13, and Elena, who is 8, live in Vivi, Indiana. In addition to that, Brandon is a singer-songwriter, and his team, his group, his following is called Brandon Gray and the Outlaw Skies. You can find his website at www.shewe, which we're probably going to have to talk about that, shewe.com, S-H-E-W-W-E-E.com. Brandon, welcome to St. Florian's.
Oh, Matt, thanks for having me, man.
It's great to see you, and it's great to be with you. So you are a singer-songwriter in addition to being a brave and courageous firefighter and emergency medical technician. And so that probably means that at some point in time, you have forced your brother and sister firefighters in fire stations to listen to your music, even when they didn't want to. So what is the worst song that you ever forced them to listen to? And what was their reaction?
Oh man, it's funny. It's gotta be almost every song, 'cause it seems as soon as I start playing, they all leave the room. Right.
It's like they're sitting there and they're saying, we can't buy an EMS run right now.
Yeah, man, tones will not go off. Right. No. You know, I don't play a ton at the firehouse. I have written a few songs here and there at the firehouse. When ideas hit, but I don't play a ton there. It's my poor wife and kids that are more subjected to the torment of me figuring out how a song should go.
So have you always been into music from an early age?
I have, yeah. My parents were both very musical. My mom played piano and sang. My dad played guitar and bass guitar and sang. And they actually had a little Southern gospel group. When we were kids, we'd travel around and watch them play. And you know, we were kids. We didn't want to be there, but we were there.
So if you grew up in church, then you probably made to do what a lot of Anabaptist traditions call a special. Special music.
I played a few special music times. Yes, I have. And then I also played in, you know, worship bands and stuff growing up, but I started playing guitar at the age of 13, and haven't put it down since.
I mean, the Psalms are actually they're meant to be sung for one thing, but they're full of all these musical references all throughout the scriptures. And it's interesting that some Christian traditions, of course, abstain completely from music, and they're rather miserable people, but the no judgment, I'm so sorry, dear bishop, I hardly know where to begin, but it just seems to me that it's an enhancement of life. Martin Luther, the reformer in the German Reformation, who sort of whittled down the church having seven sacraments to two, at least in Lutheran tradition, said if there was a third sacrament, it ought to be music.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, the Psalms are clear on it. They talk about it all the time. Praise them with the strings, praise them with the harp, crashing cymbals, your voice.
When I hear crashing cymbals, I think of that Andy Griffith episode with Barney Fife with his Castellanos marchers, right? And the Mayberry Band and torturing people. So you have sort of woven a little bit of your vocation in public service in your songwriting. Has that been sort of therapeutic? Is that a way of managing stress? What's that about for you?
Yes and yes. It's therapeutic for me for sure. Helps me get a lot of things off the chest. You know, it helps manage stress for sure. You know, I don't write all these songs. Not all of my songs are about work. You know, they're about other things, you know, friends going through divorces and, you know, broken hearts and things like that, you know, but it's funny, all my songs, when I talk about them, they all sound sad. There are love songs. There's some great happy songs in there too, but I do tend to write sadder songs. It started back in late 2017, 2018, I started writing, really focusing on songwriting. and it's grown from there. But a lot of it has come from incidents at work.
So you mentioned in 2017 in writing a song, and so those who are hearing this and live in Northern Kentucky, Greater Cincinnati, right might well remember in the fall of 2017, in October specifically, was a day that a lot would remember if you're familiar with Independence in Southern Kenton County, Kentucky. Very a lot of winding roads and this sort of stuff. And around 4:30 in the afternoon on that day, someone who decided after, I believe, playing golf.
That's correct.
Is that right? Mm-hmm. And under a state of drunkenness, was going 96 miles per hour in a place that probably is no more than...
I don't know that there's a posted speed limit on... Right, it's that kind of country road. So at max, the speed limit would be 55.
Yeah.
It's probably more like 45.
Probably so. So it's at least double, 96 miles an hour, and a crash occurs, and then... Five people, and if I remember right, three children passed away. Were you there?
I was not on the initial call because I was on the other side of town driving. We have a truck company, Truck 460, an aerial ladder. And I was driving that truck that day, and I got called over there because Kenton County Police wanted to put the ladder up to take pictures. The debris field was so large, they couldn't capture it without getting up high enough to shoot down over it. And so they called us over there, and I, you know, we got to station one from station three where I was, and you could just, every guy that was at station one had that 1,000-yard stare. Like, what did we just do? What did we just witness? What did we, and so I immediately picked up the phone and called people from the peer support team and said, hey, I need help. We got guys that are going to have... need to talk and work through some issues. And so we got over there, and it was recommended to us for the mental health of those that had already been there for them not to go back to do recovery. And my lieutenant and I got there, and I spoke with the chief, and he said, fine, you guys will do the recovery. So I was there to extricate all five bodies from the vehicle.
So that's an image you'll not forget?
Never. Or a smell.
Can you describe that image?
I can. There was, the roof of the car had essentially been removed by the other vehicle. The three children in the back seat were all intact. The mother was not. She had some dismemberment. We'll leave it at that.
That's awful.
Yeah. Dad was looked fairly normal, but had succumbed to
Except
eternal.
Except he was dead.
Right. Had succumbed to eternal internal injuries. And then the three children, the thing that got me, man, is the three children in the back, one of them was special needs, and they were holding hands. And it was just, man, when I had to pry their hands apart, it was awful.
How does that affect you to this day? Is that are the dreams, images, random things?
No dreams. You know, I obviously it's still very visual to me. It's clear. I can see it like it happened yesterday. You know, and just random thoughts, just every now and again. You know, I hate driving that road now. You know,
you probably have never been on that road where you didn't think about that again.
Sure. You know, I mean, we were checking hydrants on that road this summer, and I was like, I hate this road.
Right.
Like,
a therapist would make a lot of money off of me if I went through that one.
Yeah. Yeah. You know,
did you get professional help in that one?
I did. Yeah. EAP kicked in big time for me, and I went and had numerous conversations and have worked through it. But then songwriting was a big part of it for me. You know?
So let's talk about that. So, you know, a spiritual principle for me is living resurrection. So a lot of people as Christians, they want to think about resurrection that happens one day after the hearse comes and takes you to Lindemann Funeral Home or something. And then you talk about that. But I think there's signs, even signs in the natural order of things of resurrection, the process of life and transforming to death and then back to life again. I see that in the wintertime that leads to the spring, for example, and the blooming of new life. I see that in situations like which we're experiencing in Western Kentucky right now, of lots of destruction and dismemberment from tornadic activity. And then the people come together and new life and hope comes out of that. That's a sign of resurrection to me in the direction that all things are heading. And so a sign of resurrection to me is something that happens in your life as a result. Can you tell us a little bit more about that as a result of this accident on Staffordsburg Road?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's been a long process, but, you know, I am now able to, talk about it. I'm able to move past it. And, you know, it actually, that car wreck led to one of the greatest things in my life. And that was the adoption of my daughter, you know, and that's a beautiful picture of new life and resurrection, within my own life. You know, I mean, I see resurrection too, as being a man that believes in God. You know, the scripture is clear. When you become a believer in Christ, the old things have passed away, right? The past doesn't matter. Now it's, you are a child of God. You are an adopted heir, you know? And so it's from that point forward, it's new life. It's a new beginning. And, you know, that car wreck, as hard as it was and as awful as it was for me, I was able to do one of the greatest things I'll ever do in my life, and that was adopt a little girl from China.
So you you and your wife, Heidi, adopt Elena, who's now 8, from China. And what part of China was she from?
She's from Maoming, which is like the southeast. It's actually quite tropical there. Maoming, China.
So how does music tie into this incident as well?
So it all happened kind of at the same time, right? I had dealt with this car wreck. I'm adopting my daughter, and I felt like I was getting pulled in two totally different directions from these two things. One being awful, the other being amazing. And I just, you know, like I do lots of times, I sat down with a guitar and usually songwriting for me, that's how it happens. I'll sit down with a guitar and I'll start playing, and then the lyrics will start to form.
And so a song comes out of this.
And a song comes out of
it. And that's called A New Way?
It's called Say Why.
Say Why.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why don't you say why for us now and play that for us and sing that for us.
I just want to say this is the first time we've had music on the podcast.
That's right. And I have I majored in philosophy and history, so I have no idea what I'm doing production wise.
It's gonna be great. I'm not gonna screw it up, you're not gonna screw it up, it's gonna be great. This song is called Say Why. Well, you said my sins are covered, but I'm struggling to believe. When I see all the bad things that are happening to me, the last few years have been full of heartbreak and tragedy. And now I'm wondering what happened to love. Well, I don't think that I'm dying, but I sure don't feel alive. I sure could use a new heart deep inside. Yeah, I'm broken down and beaten in the dark parts of my mind. And I could use the light of love to be my guide. Well, I can't seem to handle any more weight on my back. The wheels have fallen off, and the train has jumped this track. Well, I survived the crash without a single scratch. And I can't for the life of me say why. Well, I don't think that I'm dying, but I sure don't feel alive. I sure could use a new heart deep inside. Yeah, I'm broken down and beaten in the dark parts of my mind. And I could use the light of love to be my guide. Well, I don't think that I'm dying, but I sure don't feel alive. And I sure could use a new heart deep inside. Yeah, I'm broken down and beaten in the dark parts of my mind. And I could use the light of love to be my guide. Yes, I could use the light of love to be my guide.
That was Say Why, written and performed by Brandon Gray, who we're talking with today on St. Florian's, singer-songwriter, firefighter, emergency medical technician. The words that are powerful to me speak of light, and light, of course, as we know, dispels darkness and the darkness of our lives, the darkness of the world, the darkness of death, and a sign of resurrection. And we like to understand the Christ as the light of the world that no darkness overcomes, including horrible wrecks on windy roads in Independence.
Yeah.
So this song has even more connection to an adoption process, right?
Correct. Yeah. You know, I mean, so that whole process, when I was going through this car wreck and trying to process that and deal with that was the light, right? Knowing, like, getting these videos from China of my daughter, right? Like, man, that was the light. That's what did my heart the most good, you know, and knowing that, man, there's still a whole lot of good going on in this world, and this is just a little speck of it.
Tell me about what your heart felt the first time you laid your eyes on Elena.
Oh, man. You know, so the process is kind of a weird process, you know, like you almost feel like you're shopping for a kid. That's the only way I know how to describe it. Like you pick an agency and then you start looking at available children, right? And you're basically just basing it off of a picture, an age, and then if they have any complications, you know, and so we were scrolling through and Heidi and I had talked about kind of like you have to set, like, what are we willing to accept medically? And one of the things we said that we didn't think that God was calling us to would be any child that was wheelchair bound. Like, that just is a whole nother level. And God bless all those people that have wheel, you know, that have that love for those kids and are able to do that. But I didn't feel as we were being called in that direction.
It's got to be hard, though, too, because you're scrolling through these things and it breaks your heart to see certain situations. And my goodness, right?
Yeah, it does. And so we actually found a little girl and there were no pictures. There was nothing, anything to say that she was wheelchair bound. And so when you request a file, they say, okay, you have seven days to make your decision. So they lock that file. No one else can have it except for us. And you have 7 days. And so they sent us that file and we started looking through it and found out that she actually had spina bifida and was going to be wheelchair bound her entire life. And we were like, oh, dang, you know, because she was just this beautiful little Chinese baby, man, like just gorgeous. And so we sent it back and we started looking again and boom, here comes this picture of Elena. And her Chinese name was Mao Fu Chi. And so here's this little picture of Malfucci, right? We hadn't decided on a name yet. We didn't know what we were going to name her. We asked to see her file. They sent us her file, and there was actually some video of her. And here's this spunky little kid, man, just having coloring and doing all this stuff. And Heidi and I both just at that moment, we were like, that's our daughter right there. That's her.
So I'm going to call you back to answering that question. What was your heart like the first time you saw her?
Oh, man, it was overjoyed, right? Like, it was just, you know, I mean, it was excitement. It was love. It was just like, why do I have to wait so long, right? Like, let's go. Let's pack the bags. Let's go tonight, right? Like, get me on a plane. Let's go. And you know, unfortunately, that's not the way it works, you know?
Have you and Heidi spent a lot of time learning Chinese culture?
Yeah. You know, we try to celebrate Chinese New Year, and we celebrate what they call Gotcha Day. We just celebrated that back on December 3rd. That's when Elena actually became ours 3 years ago on December 3rd. You know, we Autumn Festival and all of that. But it's funny, Elena actually doesn't really want a whole lot to do with it right now at this period in her life, because it was such a rough time for her. She'd rather just forget about it for now. But we are very hopeful that as she gets older, she'll want to continue to maintain her Chinese heritage and her Chinese culture and all that.
It's been a rough go in our country and world in the last few years, to say the least. And one of the things that's not lost on me is the amount of continued discrimination that Asian Americans have faced because of who they are and what they look like. Even here in Northern Kentucky, various death threats and different things came into different Chinese restaurants and things like that, political leaders calling COVID-19, which put you in the hospital for 8 days, right? Is that right? The Chinese virus and this kind of stuff. And are you more aware now of when people say things or do things now that your family has changed a little bit?
Sure, absolutely. There are plenty of
stares. It really makes me mad.
There are plenty of stares in the grocery line. Right.
Really.
You know, I have good friends that adopted two beautiful daughters from the Republic of Congo. And, you know, like it's even more obvious for them, you know, because theirs is as white as white gets. And they've got these two beautiful African daughters. And I mean, I know people, it hasn't happened to us. No one's made a comment. You get plenty of stares and people trying to figure it out. Right. But they get comments. You know, like, well, who are these two girls and are they your daughter? You know, like, mind your own business, people. You know what right. I mean? Like, get your groceries and get on down the road.
We are so broken as a people. I used to supervise high school basketball officials in Northern Kentucky, and I put three African American officials in a basketball game in a Northern Kentucky high school. And I can remember well the look on fans' faces when all of a sudden the entire officiating crew was black. And that wasn't the direction I was going to go, but I think we got sort of led there a little bit. And just how pitiful that is, that why we are so inclined to divide on our differences.
Yeah. I remember specific with the Chinese thing when COVID-19 hit and they started calling it the China virus and all that, there was a family... in somewhere in Texas. I want to say Houston, but I don't know that that's correct.
Okay.
And she was an adopted daughter, Caucasian parents, and they stabbed the girl, stabbed the dad. I believe they were at a Sam's Club or something like that, all over because their daughter was from China. And so I remember Heidi and I, we had to sit down and I said, okay, we have to have this conversation now because, you know, things are happening. And so, you know, it was like, you got to keep your head on a swivel. We got to, you know, you got to know what's going on around you. Like, heads up, things could get rough, you know? And so we took, you know, we just a little extra caution when we would go to different places and, you know, make sure that the stairs weren't too heavy and, you know, try to read people a little more, but...
Do you notice that perhaps friends and others that, or even professional friends or people you work with, that perhaps even some of their own attitudes or previously held opinions may have softened or changed as a result of what you and your family have done?
I think maybe more, not necessarily at work, but more in my friends directly around me a little bit maybe. But you know, I'm blessed to have a great surrounding of friends, you know, and family. My parents, you know, are accepting of everyone and have instilled that in me and my brother. And so I guess it's fortunately I haven't had to experience a whole lot of change.
You know, I think about a lot of the disaster relief that's going on around our country and world, and specifically in Western Kentucky right now, and the words of Jesus in Matthew 25 of talking about whenever you have done this act to one of the least of these, my sisters or brothers, you have done it unto me. In other words, that the Christ resides in each of us, and as you serve others, you serve Jesus. And it's not lost on me that if we really believe that as a people, we would treat people differently if we really believe that Christ was inside of someone.
Sure. Yeah. And if we could only see people with the eyes of Jesus, yeah. Right?
Or see the Jesus in them, and you think, right. Well, and I guess there's probably some people that would treat, I mean, they did kill him, so that they probably would treat him the same way anyway, but it just reveals a sort of a spiritual darkness. So you have And Elena has an older brother, Ezra, who's 13. You've named your oldest after a minor prophet in the First Testament, the Old Testament. And Ezra was a bit of a legalist in the Old Testament. He's an Israelite that calls upon others to make sure that they have followed the law, the Torah, very well. So Ezra the scribe is what he's often called to, a highly respected figure in Judaism. How's that going for Ezra?
It's good. It's good. Actually, when I did a little bit of research on the name, it came up meaning teacher and helper.
That's right.
And man, those are two attributes of my son that are undeniable. Absolutely undeniable. And I love it. You know, he just got the sportsmanship award for the middle school football team. You know, they said this kid is first on the field, last off the field. He's always helping clean up the locker room, clean up the bus, and his teachers can't say enough good about him. And I was like,
"That's my boy. Proud That's
dad,
my son.
Proud dad moment right here." You know, like That's you know, son. He's a leader on the team, and I was like, "Yes, that's why his name is Ezra."
So let's shift gears a little bit. Why did you get into the fire service?
Because rock and roll wasn't working out, man.
It wasn't paying the bills.
When I was graduating high school, I had to do what was called a senior exit project. And if you didn't do your senior exit project correctly, you didn't graduate. And so when I went to my teachers, I said, I want to be a guitar player, a rock star, right? They were like, no. They're like, if you do that, you're going to fail. And they said, what you need to do is prove, like, if you're going to do a career path that you're going to go to college, you need to say what the next 4 years are going to look like. And then when you graduate college, what your starting salary is going to be, and then what in 5 years, what your salary would be. And I was like, well, who knows? As a guitar player, right? You can't answer those questions. So I was leaving school one day right outside of Simon Kenton High School, and there's a bad car wreck. And we stop. It happens to be some friends of ours, me and a buddy that would ride together. And no one's helping. And I was like, why is everybody just standing around staring? Like, somebody helped these girls, right? Two girls had hit a telephone pole. So we jump right in and start helping and not knowing how to do anything or what we should do, but daggone it, we're going to help. And so we got done with that, and I was like, that was kind of cool, right? And then about 2 weeks later, me and the same friend, we were down by Pioneer Park on Kentucky 17 there, and big car wreck right in front of us. Same thing. Everybody's just standing around looking, and I'm like, somebody help these people, right? So I jump right in and start helping. And I'm like, maybe I should pay attention to what's going on here. Like, you know, this is the writing on the wall. So I ended up doing my senior exit project on being an EMT. I graduated Simon Kenton, went to Northern, got my EMT, and immediately started volunteering at Independence Fire.
And so 23 years later, here we are.
23 years later, 18 of it, almost 18 of it full time, yeah.
And quite the growing area. What's it like to serve in your hometown, if you will?
You know, I love it. I do though always keep it in the back of my mind that I could come across people that I know. And that has happened, but nothing overly tragic. Man, I love it. I love working in my hometown, the town I grew up in. You know, I know the area, I know the people. You know, and it almost, I think, helps me do the job.
I think one of the things that all public servants, but especially those in the first responder community, and we've talked about this on our podcast before, about to guard against the notion of seeing that everybody must be the same way of the people that I continue to see all the time and becoming jaded as a result, that, you know, nobody calls 911 on a good day. No one, you know, no one calls just to say hello and how are you doing? That it's when things are not going well. And yet I think the majority of people out there, they want to help. They want to serve. They want to know what to do and how to do it. And so I think one of the things of serving in your hometown can do is to continue to see a little bit more of a larger perspective, and that people get in harder situations and times that require an intervention of folks from the outside, but it's good to know that there would be people who would come and care. But it's got to be hard, though, to see certain things repeating themselves over and over again. Can you say about a little bit more about what some of those things are for you?
You know, the first one that jumps off the page would be the heroin epidemic. You know, I mean, we constantly see it, and it's not always heroin, but just, you know, the whole overdose run of things. You know, mental health has taken a jump to the front. You know, we get it lots of times. For us, it's called an emotional crisis. And it's usually, lots of times it's of the teenage variety. You know, they're younger, kids, you know, those two things, you see it come across your phone or you hear it over the tones or whatever. And you just, oh, another one,
right?
You know, like,
and it does seem that obviously emotions, psychological behavior, upbringing, all sorts of ingredients go into it, into some of those things that we talk about in terms of opioid addiction and heroin crisis and overdoses. And I think there's a spiritual component of that is often missing with a lot of people. I get a little frustrated, though, when I hear some people would say things like, well, if they just gave their life to Jesus, then they wouldn't have these problems anymore. I know plenty of Christians that struggle with addiction.
Sure.
And or whatever it might happen to be. It doesn't mean that somehow or another you don't love Jesus or that Jesus doesn't love you. I mean, it's easy to put blame, but there is something about, I think, a spiritual void, though, that you could say to someone, here, try this. It will likely kill you. And the person says, okay, I'll do it.
Yeah. Let's give it a shot.
Because there's no hope for tomorrow. There's no, right. No one's thinking about what their retirement's going to be. No, they're just getting through the day. And when you can't see beyond the day,
yeah,
you're inclined to.
Yeah. Especially in today's world, right?
There's a sobering statistic that I read in the Louisville Courier Journal not too long ago that in the last 3 years leading up here to 2021, the Centers of Disease Control has reported that in the Commonwealth, we have a 51% spike in overdose-related deaths in the last 3 years. It's not going the direction, despite all of our advances and all of our programs and different things in the last 3 years. It's a 51% increase. That's not the result we wanted.
No. And, you know, I think there's a misconception too, when we talk about, heroin or overdoses, I think a lot of people automatically get that mindset of, well, that's a lower income, you know, economic kind of standard. That's not the case.
That's
not the case at all. You know, and I tell this to people all the time. Heroin's in every neighborhood in Northern Kentucky. I don't care how much money's rolling through it. It doesn't matter. There is someone in that neighborhood shooting heroin or addicted,
that's right,
or addicted to some type of illegal narcotic.
Right? Or even the legal ones.
Yeah, you know, because unfortunately, and that's why, right? Because unfortunately, the illegal narcotics got started with legal narcotics in a lot of people's case. You know, and so there's that preconception that, oh, well, you know, that doesn't affect me. And that's not around here. Yeah, I hate to tell you, it sure is.
I've said this before, and it bears repeating, that I think sometimes those things are utilized to cover up our pain, right? That's a form of medication. And if you don't do something with your pain in life, one of two things happen. Either one, you become a miserable person, and two, you will give it to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And it's misery loves company, as the old saying goes. So you are on an EMS incident one time, and I want you to say a little bit more about that because it leads to another song.
This was before heroin was considered an epidemic, back in 2007, maybe. I think the heroin epidemic started around 2008, 2009, 10, somewhere in that area. This was a while ago, and I was on an engine that day, a first response engine, and we got dispatched for a possible overdose to a lower income apartment complex. Come in, and sure enough, mom's on the living room floor of this apartment, completely unconscious, not breathing, and a syringe sticking out of her right arm. And her little boy, she got a 2-year-old boy, about two, jumping up and down on the couch in nothing but a diaper, cartoons, screaming loud on the TV. And, you know, we're getting to work on her. And while we're working on her, you can hear around the corner in the bedroom, the police are there, and they're in a very verbal, loud verbal discussion with this boyfriend about the heroin they had discovered underneath their bedroom mattress. And so that led to a song called Heroin Under the Mattress.
So let's hear that. We're Heroin Under the Mattress, written and performed by Brandon Gray and the Outlaw Skies.
Yeah, the Outlaw Skies. This song I put out as a single back in September. And then I put out an EP back in October that's entitled Heroin Under the Mattress, and it also has this song on it. And I found you on the floor of your apartment. The needle mining veins, it tells the truth. I wonder if you'll know, if you'll remember that 2-year-old boy watching you. Well, I hear yelling, yeah, it's coming from the bedroom. Yeah, the cops, well, they're taking your man to jail. They found that heroin under your dirty mattress, but he swears he doesn't know how it got there. Well, the poison in your veins is pushing love out of your heart. And the glimmer in your eyes, well, it's starting to fade. It's starting to go dark. And I take that needle from your arm, and the state, well, the state, they take your boy. As you start to scream, yeah, you start to holler, please don't forget his favorite toy. please don't forget his favorite toy. Yeah, the poison in your veins is pushing love out of your heart. And the glimmer in your eyes, well, it's starting to fade. It's starting to go dark. Yeah, the poison in your veins is pushing love out of your heart. And the glimmer in your eyes, well, it's starting to fade. It's starting to go dark. Yeah, it's starting to fade, starting to go dark. Yeah, it's starting to fade, it's gonna go dark.
That was Heroin Under the Mattress by Brandon Gray, a song he's written. And I want to talk about this song. When you said that you write some sad songs, you ain't kidding, brother.
Man, yeah, this one's a sad one.
But it's reality. And I think that what I hear in that song is not only the pain of the person that you encountered that day and that others that you work with encountered that day, but maybe a little bit of your own pain as a result of that and seeing those kinds of images. Did my years of training hone in on that correctly?
Yes, they did. Sure did.
Sure did. I called you out on that. Right.
Yeah. You know, I mean, like I said, this song is about a story from 2007 or 2008, and I just released it as a single 2 months ago.
So you've been keeping that for about 14 years.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it just, you know, it's just one of those. Again, it happens to every first responder, and if any of them say it doesn't, they're lying. There are runs that you carry for the rest of your life, and this was one of them. And the big reason this one stuck with me was the reaction of the mom when she lost her son. It wasn't, oh my God, I'm losing my son. Am I ever going to see him again? When can I get him back? It was, oh, I don't have to take care of him anymore. Awesome. Like, what? You know, me as a parent, and in 2008, that's when my son was born, right? So me as a new parent was just overwhelmed by the reaction of this mother, and it stuck with me.
So it's one of the things that I see in chaplaincy work, to say the least, is what we call the negative consequence of caring, the notion of compassion fatigue, or otherwise known as secondary traumatic stress. And that's different than post-traumatic stress or acute stress disorder. God, we got all sorts of disorders, right? With
all kinds of stresses.
It means that it's a crappy situation that leads to crappy things. So right, diagnose that, right? But it is a thing that it's a natural reaction, I think, to say, I don't want to see that anymore, and I don't want to experience that anymore. And frankly, experiencing it now makes me sort of angry because there's loss behind this, and I can't fix it and do anything about it. And here we are placed in the middle of this, and all these people that say they care don't, and blah.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you say that. It makes me think, you know, I have less than 3 years to go, and I can retire. And that's the plan, you know, to do my 20 years and to retire. And I look at these young guys, they're like, man, we just need a good car wreck, extrication, da da da. And I'm like, I could honestly deal without ever having to remove a door or a roof or anyone out of a car ever again. Now, I was the same way, right? When I was 24 and getting hired, I was like, yeah, let's do this. It's going to be great. And now I'm just like, oh man, I would be absolutely 100% okay.
I remember one time I was believe it or not, as some of you that know me well know that I was a volunteer firefighter in Hebron way back in the day. Even before we were 18 years old, we were allowed to be cadets. And believe it or not, we got to ride on the back of tailboards. I got to do all sorts of things that others would just dream of doing.
Sure,
right?
Yeah.
And so we would do that. And I remember people doing exactly that. They'd sit around the fire station and the firehouse, and it'd be like, any minute now, something is going to happen, you know.
It's a full moon. It's going to be a good one. Right.
And I remember one of the older gentlemen who's no longer on this side of the kingdom who said, well, if we're lucky, you idiots, basically, someone's going to wrap their car around a pole any minute, you know, and that kind of sobering thing of, I get that people want to help, people want to do, but once you've seen enough, enough is enough, right? And so I hear a little bit in this song about dealing with what were realities in the situation that you encountered. And for you, and perhaps others that listen, if you can do a good thing with this and provide a little bit of giving voice to what is difficult and painful, then that's been helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I wrote this song for me, I also wrote it for other first responders, but also for other people that maybe are struggling with addiction, or maybe their parents of kids struggling with addiction, you know, so they can know that, man, you're not doing this alone, right? I think that's one of the greatest works of the devil, man, is isolation, to make you feel that you're the only one. You're the only one that's ever going to experience this. Man, that's not true. Don't fall for that trick, right? There are plenty of people that are there to help you,
right,
and get you through whatever it is you're going through.
Well, I think it's and going through is the right image to say, because that is the history, I think. It's our religious history. It's our Jewish background. It's our Christian heritage that the Israelites did not have the Red Sea taken from them, their problems. The sea was parted for them to go through.
Right.
So, you know, it.
And then it became Pharaoh's problem.
Right. It became, right. It was definitely a four-alarm day. But I think that that's the same thing with resurrection, you know, that death is something to go through leads to resurrection, that life cycle process of, and I think that one of the redemptive things that I see so many people who actually do something with the things they experience is they get to have some light that we've talked about shine on some dark situations. Mm-hmm. And while it's not complete and while it's not perfect, there's some redemption and there's some hope that comes from those kinds of things. And I think we hold on to that.
Sure.
So what's next for you? What are you going to try to get the band going?
I would like to. That'd be awesome. You know, the band, I started this whole Brandon Grant the Outlaw Sky thing in January of 2020. Like, I could not have picked a worse time to try to start a band and playing music out in venues, and because COVID hit and it all got shut down, but things are coming back to life, and that's great. I've been doing a lot of singer-songwriter.
It's resurrection.
Yeah, I've been doing a lot of songwriter rounds. There's a great event that happens the third Thursday of every month called the Crooner Circus, put on by a good buddy of mine named Noah Smith at Big Ash Brewing up in Mount Washington, and it's literally about 12 songwriters come together and we all play songs we wrote, and it's just a wonderful, wonderful event that anyone is welcome to attend and sit in and listen. But I've been working on a new
single.
When
is that?
It's the third Thursday of every month, so it's actually this Thursday at Big Ash Brewing. It starts at 7 p.m. I will not be there this month. I kind of have taken November and December off. I had to have some knee surgery last month in November.
You're getting old.
Right? Man, you ain't kidding. And, so I've taken these last 2 months off kind of, just from performing, and I thought I was going to take a break from writing, but that didn't happen. I wrote a new single that I'm working on, and hopefully it'll be out next month. I'm looking forward to getting through the holidays and getting this single done and getting it out there, and hopefully people enjoy it. And
So we've been speaking with Brandon Gray, singer, songwriter, firefighter, EMT, an all-around good guy, my brother in Christ. So you can find his music at his website, www.shewee, that's S-H-E-W-W-E-E.com. Where'd you come up with that name?
So you know what is funny? I was doing these songwriter things, and apparently I was using the term shoo-wee quite often with not even realizing it, right? Like, it kind of goes around the firehouses. I think a lot of the local firehouses are using the term shoo-wee.
And yeah, so it keeps them from saying other
things. Right. So, but I would use it in like, you know, somebody would make a joke or somebody, we'd be in something, you know, some weird situation. And I'd just go, shoo-wee, right? Like, man, what in the world was that? Right. Like, and so I was doing these songwriter things, and apparently I was saying it, and a couple of my buddies that are songwriter buddies, they're like, man, you say that a ton, shoo-wee, you ought to like make t-shirts and do this and do that. And so.
And here we are.
Here we are. And so I looked for BrandonGrayMusic.com, right? Well, of course, that doesn't exist. And I was sitting around, I looked at my wife, I was like, what if we do shoo-wee.com? I said, if it's available, even if we're not going to use it, I'm buying it, right? And so, sure enough, it was available.
And it was available, and you got it.
And there it is.
I taught my guys at the firehouse at Newport once that some of them were getting in trouble for, they get a little jaded, and they get a little upset with the public, and they might decide to give their own opinion and then get in trouble and say things they probably regret. And I've been like that in preaching sometimes, and we all been that way before, where words come out of our mouth, and you just can't reach out and grab them
and
get them back, right? And silence can't be misquoted, but you got to say something. So I taught my boys, I said, listen, when that happens, you just look at someone, and you really want to tell them off. You just really want to tell them where to go. You just look at them and say, good for you.
Good for you.
Good for you. And you'll know what that really meant. Well, then one of my dearest friends at Newport came in the firehouse a couple days later, and everybody was talking. And then all of a sudden he said, why does everyone keep looking at me and saying, good for you? So that's how that happened. So
and they said, you need to sit down and talk with Father Matt.
That's right. Yeah, that's exactly what happened. So, Brandon, where do you find hope in the world?
Oh, man, in Jesus. You know, hope is not in the things seen. It's in the things unseen. And man, my hope is in Jesus. I'm waiting for that trumpet to blow and the church be raptured. And away we go, man. Then that's the beginning, right? The Bible's clear on it, man. We're only visiting. We're aliens here. This is not our home, and my hope is in Jesus.
Well, that's pretty awesome, because I think that one of the things that I try to remember, that in the time that I do get before all of that, that it's sort of like you get to drive the car off the lot and drive that whole thing as if it was your own, and you don't even own it all yet,
right?
And that it's like this down payment that's been made. And so you get to experience that on this side. And that's the thing too, is that, and that's been sort of my Advent and Christmas reflection this year, is trying to live more into the realities of the future now. Because, you know, I'm 51. If I'm lucky, I'm in the fourth quarter of my life probably. Time, regardless of time to God, is much greater than time to us, and so I want to try to experience those things more and more here and now, and even through painful situations, of pointing to a brighter day, not only tomorrow but today.
Yeah,
and I think we're all in that together. So our time's starting to come to close. Brandon, I cannot thank you enough for being here and taking some time to be on St. Florian's.
Man, thanks for thinking of me. I got the text message from you, and I was like, say, what, are we going to do a podcast?
Heck, all yeah.
Right. Yeah.
It's not bad for a 51-year-old Episcopalian,
man,
is it?
It's awesome.
Yes, you know. Episcopalians do talk about Jesus. How about that? Right?
There we go.
It's a good thing. So let's offer some prayer, and then we're going to have Brandon, give us a little bit more musical rendition and call it a day. Gracious God, you are our creator and sustainer of all living things. Look with kindness and understanding upon those who serve the common good. We give you thanks for people like Brandon, his wife Heidi, his son Ezra, and his daughter Elena. We pray that you would watch over them, guide them, bless them, so that they might always know the love you have for them, and give us all your grace to be the best versions of ourselves, and not to be overcome by evil, but to overcome evil with good and to live at peace with one another. Be present with all who are struggling, especially from incidents of the past, and shower upon us all the gifts of your Spirit, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, the Spirit of knowledge and the fear of the Lord, and the Spirit of joy in your presence. It's in Jesus' name that we pray. Amen.
Amen.
Brandon, thank you for being here. I love you, brother.
Oh, man, thanks for having me. I love you, too.
So what are you going to offer us?
I'm going to play a song that's a little on the lighter side.
Good, because if you don't, I have to interrupt you with theme song. So we're going to try something new here.
Try something a little on the lighter side. This song is called No Other Way. It's on my EP that came out back in on October 15th. And you can hear that everywhere, Spotify, Apple, Amazon, YouTube. But it's called No Other Way. It's a simple little love song. You know, a girl tells a guy, hey, you're going to fall in love with me. And he says, no, I'm not. And ends up falling in love with her.
So, No Other Way by Brandon Gray. It rhymes.
Oh, I got to remember how it goes. There it is. We just met down at the local bar. You said you thought this thing would go far. Well, I said no, I'm not sticking around. I'm just a driver roaming from town to town. Well, kiss me once, yeah, girl, make it nice. 'Cause come tomorrow I'll be gone. Yeah, you won't kiss me twice. So let's have fun, yeah, let's have a ball. We'll go out singing, rocking, dancing. Yeah, we'll do it all. And come on, baby, break my heart. See if you can make me stay. And come on, baby, yeah, break my heart. Show me there's no other way. No other way. Your lips touched mine, it was electricity. And my poor heart, it just skipped a beat. Well, I was in trouble, yeah, I'm in too deep. And I don't know how to swim, yeah, girl, I need you to save me. And come on, baby, break my heart. See if you can make me stay. And come on, baby, yeah, break my heart. Show me there's no other way. Ah, yeah, you broke. Oh, my goodness. Matt, I can't remember how it goes. Yeah, you broke. Nope. Yeah, you broke my heart. There it is. And it felt so good. Yeah, you broke my heart like you said you would. And come on, baby, break my heart. See if you can make me stay. And come on, baby, yeah, break my heart. Show me there's no other way. And come on, baby, yeah, break my heart. See if you can make me stay. And come on, baby, yeah, break my heart. Show me there's no other way. No other way.
You've been listening to St. Florian's with Father Matthew Young, the podcast that tells the stories of those who serve the common good. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and a host of other locations. We've been with Brandon Gray and Brandon Gray and the Outlaw Skies. You can find his music at www.shewee.com. Until the next time, this is Father Matthew Young. May God bless us all.